Hi, this is Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings here on the Voice of America. Today we are joined by a singer-songwriter who has achieved something that not too many other people have. First of all, he's got a Brit Award. Second of all, he's got billions, yes, I said billions of streams. And he's had number one songs around the world. We welcome Tom Walker to our program today. Welcome, Tom Walker, to the Voice of America.
Thanks, Larry. How are you doing?
I am doing just fine. Does that number blow your mind? I mean, did you ever imagine in your life that billions of anything would be achievable in this business?
I suppose when you grow up listening to CDs, you're not really aware of how many they've sold or how many times they've been played. So it always is a strange thing to me that it's all laid out in numbers now. But obviously, it's a huge achievement, and to know that there's so many fans internationally, you know, around the world listening to my music is always an amazing thing.
Now, you have been making music, I guess, writing songs and creating music since you were an early teenager. I guess about 13 is when you got your first guitar and first started to actually take this whole music writing and songwriting business seriously.
Yeah, I mean, my dad, he was massively into music. You know, he's got a huge record collection, and it was really eclectic. It was anything from Deadmau5 to Prodigy to AC/DC to Muddy Waters. It was really eclectic mix. And he bought me my first guitar when I was 12 years old, and I just absolutely fell in love with the guitar. It's the one instrument that just seemed to make sense to me straight away. And, you know, a couple of years later, I bought a bass. And then I bought a drum kit, and then I started to put this kind of one-man band together in my bedroom. And then I bought a little recording device and started making songs and then started singing. And it was all this really long, gradual process of, you know, jack of all trades, master of none kind of thing.
But your dad was your main influence as far as music goes. And you and he would, I guess, go to concerts together. You would watch, you know, I mean, that's kind of cool. That's a really... Not too many people can say that their dad would take them to concerts and gigs. That's cool.
Yeah, I mean, my dad, he just loved going to gigs. He was so into it. And he took me to my first concert, which was AC/DC in Paris when I was 9 years old. And it was like the most exciting thing I'd ever been to in my life. And I was watching Angus Young up on the stage running around like some kind of demented chicken man in a schoolboy outfit, absolutely shredding the guitar. And I just kind of looked up and thought, oh my God, I'd love to do something like that one day. That looks incredible and a great deal of fun.
That's what I want to do.
Yeah, I want to be that guy.
I want to be that guy. And you also like Michael Jackson. So obviously you have quite a wide, diverse music background. You know, Thriller, I read somewhere, is still today your favorite album.
I think it was one of my first records that my dad ever played for me. Is one of my earliest memories. But he was one of those people that he took me to everything. So we'd go to like classical gigs, jazz gigs. We'd go to, you know, we watched B.B. King together before he died at the MEN Arena. Like, it was just such an eclectic mix. So he introduced me to everything in the hope, you know, I would take a few things for myself and figure out what I liked. And yeah, he was always on board. You know, when I bought like the new Sum 41 album home when I was a teenager, he was always up for giving it a listen and playing it in the car and stuff. It was never like, no, we'll have my music only. So yeah, he was a real inspiration when it came to music for sure.
Mm-hmm. So now you have conquered the UK. I'm sure that you can't walk out on the street and not be recognized. You know, you can get the best seat in any restaurant you want in the UK. Now it's America. Now we're targeting America, and you want to get into this market.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we've done quite a lot of touring through America, but it's so vast, you know. Like, England is absolutely tiny. Like, the whole of California is bigger than the whole of UK. So, like, we once toured with a band called The Script, and it was our first ever main tour in America. We were supporting them, and we drove from New York to LA over 24 days and did 17 shows. And every gig was like, wake up in the morning, drive for 4 hours, do the gig, after the gig, drive for 6 hours, go to sleep, wake up, drive, you know, again. So I guess we've just not spent enough time in America. But I did just do a couple of weeks writing in Nashville, and then I went over to LA after that. And, you know, I always love coming out to the States. It's such a great place to play, and the crowds have been really good to us. And the food, you know, the food is so good. The chicken wings out there are unbeatable.
Now, you grew up in Glasgow, and then you moved to Manchester. So, yeah. The difference between those two places is I would think is kind of, you know, and London is now your home. You're in London right now. So moving around throughout the UK, those are different places with different vibes. And so how has that affected your songwriting?
Yeah, I mean, I've got strong ties to Scotland, but I left when I was 3.5 years old, so I barely remember living there. So I spent most of my life when I was growing up on the outskirts of Manchester. And, you know, I think Scotland, Manchester, London, they've all got great music scenes, all different, especially in the kind of live sector. Like, for me, Glasgow is one of my favourite places in the world to do a gig. There's a venue called King Tut's Wah Wah Hut, which, you know, Oasis were discovered in, and it's a really small, maybe like 300 cap venue, but it's just got so much history. So many bands have come through there. They really look after their artists. You know, they feed everybody, no matter if you're the fourth person in front of the main band or if you're the headliner, and they just treat, you know, they've got real class. So I love playing up in Scotland. The music scene there is great, but obviously London has got everything as well. It's got all the record labels here. Everything's on your doorstep. All the big venues, you know. So it's, I think the whole of the UK has got something to offer in terms of music for sure.
And 2019 was a life-changing year for you, you know, winning the Brit Award and being the best-selling artist in the UK that year. That's just a monumental, you know, event in anyone's life in the music industry. And how did that change you as a person? Has it changed you?
I guess it's hard to say, you know. If you ask my missus, I'd like to say she'd say no, it's not changed in much. But, you know, I've been with my partner now for 9 years. And when we met, I was giving out leaflets for a living and working for a photo booth company, babysitting drunk people at weddings part-time, and then doing music when I could. So the journey up to 2019 seemed fairly steady, but then after that it went crazy. You know, we were touring all over the world. We played Japan and Australia, New Zealand. We obviously toured in America, and all these amazing doors suddenly opened up for me and the band that I travel with, and we got to see a good part of the world so far. So, but you know, I'm trying to keep as down to earth as possible and just keep the work ethic up. I think a lot of people think when, oh, you've had this, you know, a number one album, the whole life's sorted now, it's going to be an easy road. That couldn't be further from the truth. You know, I think it's keeping it all going in this game that is the hard part.
Yes, the pressure starts, you know, and sure, you go from a venue, many artists tell me you go from a 300 seat club to a 50,000 seat stadium or you know, festivals and things like that. It's very, very different. The pressure now begins for you, but you know you're doing great. The sophomore album is going to be coming out, and that's exciting.
Yeah, so the second album, that's going to be coming out next year at some point. I believe probably sometime after April. We're just in the marks of finishing it at the moment. We hope to get it out sooner, but obviously with COVID and the pandemic, I'm not going to lie, it's difficult to write songs when you're stuck at home with nothing to talk about. So the last couple of months where things have been open, I've been able to see my mates, I've been to a couple of, see my best friends get married, and I've got all this stuff suddenly to write about because the world is opening up. So the album's coming along great. We're getting into the studio in the next couple of weeks to finish off the main singles and then start the rest of it. So it's exciting times.
And the new single is called Something Beautiful. So tell me about the new song. It's the first song off the upcoming new album. So what inspired the song? What's it about? What motivated you to write the song?
So I wrote the song with a guy called Steve Mack, and it was right at the start of the first pandemic, and it was the first ever Zoom session I ever did. And obviously that was quite odd, you know, like jumping into that whole world after being face-to-face in the studio. But we were just really jamming along and came up with like some cool ideas, because also I hadn't written in several months because we were just kind of taking a break and seeing what was going to happen. And we just came straight out the gates with that one. But I tried to finish the verses for it. I think I did 24 different verses for it, and I just couldn't get what I wanted to hear back out of the studio. So we approached Masked Wolf, because I'd heard his tune Astronaut in the Ocean, and asked him if he wanted to have a go at doing the first and the second verse on it. And the first thing he sent back was just absolutely amazing. You know, he really encapsulated the song, which is trying to find a silver lining during a really dark and difficult time, which I'm sure everybody in the world was trying to do during the pandemic. And he managed to just take what I had so far and really improve on it and really get the story right. So I was so chuffed with how it turned out, you know. It's amazing that he's off in Australia. Me and Steve co-wrote it in two different houses in London. Somehow the three of us have managed to bring it all together over the internet. I mean, really, what a time to be alive.
As an American, I would have loved to have heard the conversations and the different accents. The Australian accent. And the Scottish accent, London, British accent, that it would have been a lot of fun to listen to. So Masked Wolf, the new single, you know, Something Beautiful. What other collaborations are on the next album? Can you tell us? Can you let us in on some of the plans, the surprises?
We've got a few.
We'll keep it just between you and I, Tom.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's a few things in the pipeline, but nothing concrete yet. You know, I think the next single after Something Beautiful will just be me on my own. We've got two different songs that we're undecided on at the moment, but they're both really, really great songs, but they're so different. So we just kind of decide what direction to go in, basically. But, you know, there's definitely going to be a few more features on the album, and I'll definitely be collaborating with a couple of different artists live as well at Festival Scene and bringing a few guests on. So it's going to be exciting, but I don't want to give anything away too soon.
All right, let me ask you this then, without pinning you down for anything. If you have a wish list of who you'd like to collaborate with, who would your top three choices be?
That's such a great question. I think Lizzo. I absolutely love Lizzo. Like, her first album was so good, you know. And I just love her, like, her personality and like her musicianship. She's absolutely amazing. So she'd definitely be on the list. I think writing a song with Adele, that would be definitely a highlight as well. And Dave Grohl, you know, he'd definitely be on the list because he just seems like the loveliest dude in the rock industry. But every time I go to see them live, they get better. And I'm like, how are you still improving after this much time? You know, I just feel like they still haven't peaked at all live. They're incredible. So, yeah, those are my top picks.
Well, you've done some fantastic stuff, really. I mean, some really, really groundbreaking stuff. I know that you did Angel with a 30-piece orchestra.
Yeah.
And that was just amazing. And any plans to do that kind of really different cutting edge stuff in the future?
Yeah. So for the next kind of live version of Something Beautiful, a more stripped back in the moment acoustic kind of thing, we wanted to get in a marching band and a horn section to do a kind of New Orleans style version of that song. So that's in the works. I'm hopefully going to record that next week, and then it'll be coming out in a month or two. But yeah, I'm super excited about that. And I'm glad you picked up on that, because I really like to do, when we do the live stuff for YouTube, I really like to try and do something different and bring like a big string section or a big band or something cool into the mix that not everybody's doing. I'm so fortunate to have the chance to do that and play with so many amazing musicians and create cool content like that.
Well, you are cutting edge. You really are. And I really like your sound and your style.
Thank you.
I'm very excited about, you know, the new album. And of course, everybody loves what you put out and everybody loves what you do. Obviously, you know, there's, like I say, 2 billion streams and everything else. And we can't wait to have you, you know, come to America, which hopefully will happen in the next year, I'm sure, when you put out the new album and you tour internationally. It's not often we get to have an international star on the show. What does it feel like to you when you perform in a country that doesn't speak English, but they know the words to your music? That must blow your mind.
I can give you a really good example. Like the first time we played Japan, it was a festival, but it was indoors. And I walked out onto the stage and it was pitch black and there was silence in the room. And I was like, oh no, nobody's turned up to the gig. And then the lights came up and everybody just started screaming. But then between songs, they're like absolutely silent when you're chatting. Like the crowds are so respectful out there. And it was just a total different culture. And obviously like Japan was amazing because you go in about, no one speaks any English at all. You know, everything looks like hieroglyphics. Trying to get your way around on the tube is just a bit crazy. But I loved the madness of it all. It felt like going to space, you know. It was a total different way of life over there. And that was just so fantastic. And seeing a load of Japanese people singing your songs back to you, like word for word, like in perfect English, is absolutely crazy. And I think we paid to, I think it was 2,500 people was our first gig in Japan. So obviously you think when you go to a new country, it's going to be, oh, there'll be like maybe a couple of hundred if we're lucky because people don't know us here. But like, it was absolutely packed and I couldn't believe it. So yeah, it's an amazing experience.
Mm-hmm. Do you eat sushi?
I love sushi. I only had sushi once. We were in Japan only for 3 days before we set off for New Zealand. So I didn't really get to experience the kind of cuisine I would have liked to. It was mostly like the dressing room, and like we put some sushi on the rider. We didn't go to like the best sushi restaurant in Japan. I did go for some Japanese barbecue, which is like little bits of steak you cook yourself on the grill, and that was right. absolutely fantastic. And it yeah, was in a yeah. place that was all you can drink beer, but they cut me and the band off because we drank too much beer and we got in trouble. But you know, it's just an amazing place.
When you do go there next time, you have to order fugu. I lived in Japan. Order fugu. You may have heard about it. It's the poisonous blowfish.
Oh, yeah, from The Simpsons.
That's it.
Yeah, I know the one you mean.
Fugu. Remember that. If it's not cut exactly right, bye-bye, Tom Walker.
I'm not sure if I want to risk that, you know? You'll have to give me the specific restaurant to go to.
What a pleasure it is to have you on the show. You know, is there a website people can go to where they can keep up with you and the tour dates and everything?
Yeah, I mean, if you just Google Tom Walker, all my information will come up. My socials are all at I Am Tom Walker, all one word, if people want to check that out. And, you know, all my stuff's on Spotify as well. And hopefully we'll be touring America once this pandemic finally goes away, and we'll get out there and play some shows for the US audience. And that'll just be fantastic. I'm so looking forward to it. And thank you so much for having me on the show. I really appreciate the support, Larry.
Oh, no. Are you kidding me? It's easy. It's a pleasure to meet you and have you on. And you got to promise when you're in D.C., you'll come in our studios. Love to meet 100%. You in person and have you on the show again.
It's a day.
Thank you. Thank you. Something Beautiful is the name of the new song. We're talking with Tom Walker, and he's our guest today. Look for the new album. It's coming out in 2022. Thanks for tuning in to Border Crossings. I'm Larry London, and this is Voice of America, VOA Television.